Okay, welcome TechEd attendees. I guess you've made it to the very end, so congratulations. Who's excited for the party tonight? Yeah, all right. So talking to a few of you, you've said like, oh, it's the very end, you're tired, so it's time to stretch, like everyone, see everyone stretch? No? All right. Well, hopefully you won't fall asleep on me. I hope that we're going to go through a lot of interesting information today. My name is Brandon Bray. I'm part of the .NET Framework team. I'm the group program manager responsible for the Common Language Runtime, as well as bringing all of the different parts of the .NET Framework together to produce what goes into Windows and for you to install through Visual Studio, et cetera. So today we're going to be talking about what's new in .NET Framework 4.5. The .NET Framework just finished its 10-year birthday earlier this year. Does anyone know when .NET 1.0 actually shipped? What day? Anyone? How about to what month? Wow. All right. It was February 13th, 2002. We had a really fun birthday party for .NET. It's now a 10-year-old, so it's kind of getting up to being a teenager. It'll be a lot of fun. .NET has certainly had a lot of features over the years, and so I think as we keep moving forward, we're looking forward to seeing more and more of its basic principles of productivity, developer language choice moving forward, and really building great applications. And so what we'll be talking today is really just giving you the best overview of what you can expect. We're going to spend most of today in Visual Studio actually building an application. And while we do that, you'll get a highlight of some of the main features in .NET. But don't worry, .NET has a lot of features to offer. And so when we get to the point of seeing what has been added, we can actually go explore it. And then certainly I've been hearing a lot of questions about .NET and like anything related to the framework. So I'll leave a bit of time at the end to answer any questions. How many of you have been .NET programmers since 1.0? Awesome. How about, I should have gone backwards, but you're all 4.0 or 4.5 developers by now. So we're going to start with just what the value of .NET is. And it starts off by what do users want today? At the end of the day, we're all developers building applications for an end customer. And the first thing is we're often doing it for a particular business need. And so we need to be able to take the existing business that we have or new businesses that we're supporting and really push that forward. Whether that might be the latest app that you want to put into a store that's a data snacking app, or you're actually within an organization that has high performance needs on a server, you want to be able to do that. And the second thing that has been kind of that phrase of the day is fast and fluid experience. A fast and fluid experience is one that makes sure that the application is always responsive, that it has kind of this vibrance and experience of being able to touch it and see things happen, that that the application is meeting your needs. And then lastly, this modern connected application. And so this really comes down to one basic thing. As we see more and more proliferation of different platforms, how do I build and architect my app is a question that comes up all the time. And there's trends across the industry that .NET continues to support that helps you build those applications. And it really comes down to the platforms. We have Windows 8, we have the cloud, and then, of course, we have the phone. And on all of those, you might be building the same application or parts of the same application. And you could even imagine you're building this application on other platforms as well. As you do that, it's a kind of standard today to take part of that application, build it in the cloud, provide all the data, provide really good APIs, but then put the rest of it into a great client experience. And that's something that 4.5 lets you do even more today. So what we're going to be doing today is building, oh, sorry, You know, we have .NET as a solution for all of this. What we're going to be doing today is building a connected application. And so we've all been experiencing Metro. A lot of this you may already have seen in other parts of demos and other talks. But we're really going to try to tie all of this together, show you building the web part as well as the client part end-to-end and highlight .NET 4.5 features along the way. And as you do that, you'll probably get the experience of building this highly connected, fast and fluid, business-responsible app on any platform that you want. And at the end of this, we'll show off a number of .NET features. The way we'll be doing that is the app that we're building is a review app for .NET features. And so we're going to be doing kind of a meta talk. I'm not going to be doing any more PowerPoint slides once I start the demo. And you know, all of that's going to be in the app that we build. So you'll be along with me for the journey. The app that we're building is really just simple. The first screen that we want, you know, as we storyboard this together, is kind of a list of all the features. And we're going to have tiles for each of these that you can click through them. We want this list, it can be fairly long, but we want this list to come up as fast as possible. And so we want to make sure that all the features that come through come as quickly as possible without having to wait for every one of those. And so one thing we'll be doing is kind of passing on just the information I need instead of passing on everything and combining that with async to make a really great end user experience. And then the second screen will have a bit more information. And then we have another screen that has all the detail, the code that you might write in order to use that feature. So with that, we are going to have this architecture. You know, these are the features we'll be highlighting. Entity framework. So how many of you have used Entity Framework so far? Awesome. I think many of you came and asked me questions about that at the booth. It's a pretty nice feature for interacting with databases. We'll be showing off Entity Framework code first, now with data migration. So you can actually add and change your database while still coding, so you don't have to go change the schema anymore. The next one is Web API. And how many of you have used Web API? A few less. So how many of you have heard of REST? Good. So Web API is really built to support REST and kind of this HTTP as a web programming interface. And that goes with ASP.NET. And then above that, once we get to the client, we'll be using async to make a really fast and fluid experience using the new HTTP client. So again, we're using a client that's really built for REST consumption. And then the last thing is this portable class libraries. How many of you are programming for both the phone and the desktop? A few. How about for Metro and the cloud? Not yet. Okay. Soon you will see how easy this could be. What this really offers is as you're taking the same code and trying to run it in multiple places, you can actually take the binary and run it in multiple places without changing it. And so if you look at Silverlight and the phone and Metro and Xbox and the .NET framework, they all have slightly different API surfaces. Some have a lot more features than others, and as a result, when you're programming against this, you'd really like to know, is this method or is this class there for me to use? Portable class libraries in Visual Studio lets you program against just the intersection of all the platforms that you want to target, and then that binary can be used in multiple places. What's nice about this is if you have validation rules, as for example, I can take that code, run it on the phone, and the same code can be running on the web server, and I can make sure that validation is running the same on both sides. So that leads us into actually showing our demo, and I'll switch over to my laptop, which went to sleep. Here we go. Okay, so we're going to start from the very beginning and start with Visual Studio. Actually, building all of the user interface from scratch in front of you would actually not be a lot of fun. So what I've done for all of you is I've built kind of a mock-up of the user interface that we want to show. And so we can go through it and kind of look at it for a second. I'm just building this and now deploying it to Metro. So I have this kind of look at the tiles that I want. What I did to build this was I just went into Visual Studio and took the template that came with Visual Studio and just started plugging into it. So all the animations, kind of the layout of things, is provided out of the box by Visual Studio. Now, I can go to each of these, and I can click into it, and I get kind of the details that I wanted. I have a rating, I have a description, I have what version it came in, and I also have more details that I can click into and, you know, find out more. And if that details page isn't there, you know, then I won't have an extra image. But the last thing that's very clear is if I want to have this fast and fluid experience, and I don't want to download all of that data all at once, what I'm going to do is download it on demand. And so when I'm downloading something on demand, I'll see this kind of screen with, you know, the progress ring showing me things moving forward. Now, I can go and start working on our application. So the first thing that I want to show is just kind of what is the same as the experience. How many of you have programmed for Silverlight or WPF so far? Quite a few of you. So if I go into any of these pages and look at the XAML here, you'll see that it's fairly familiar. I have the same kind of controls, grid, you know, progress ring and so forth, buttons, list views, and you know, stacks and so forth. And so I shouldn't have to do a whole lot of new learning experience. In fact, a lot of that code that you've used with Silverlight will apply directly into Metro as well. So the next thing we want to do is actually start building this backend. Let's start coding. The first thing that we're going to do is add a new project type, and we want to add a web API project. So the thing that we're going to do is build a web project. MVC4 is a type of project that includes web API for me. And so MVC is separate from web API, but it uses a lot of the same concepts. In fact, they can coexist. So all I have to do is kind of get started. And you'll notice I have a few different projects, and I'm going to choose the web API type. And while it's kind of getting all the pieces together, so as I walk through this, the first thing I want to show is in the web config file, this connection string. You'll see I'm connecting to a database here, the LocalDB database here. LocalDB is a new type of database that's included in Visual Studio 2012. It's focused specifically on developer experiences. And so instead of SQL Express, which is really a SQL product that's meant to install in production, LocalDB is a developer experience. And it supports databases up to 10 gigabytes fairly easily. And so that database doesn't actually exist. If I go look at the databases here and I connect to it, and I walk through the databases here, you'll see that the database actually doesn't exist. We'll be using that later when we build code first. So the next thing is this values controller. You'll see that I created a web API, and web API is focused on HTTP programming. So as I go through this, HTTP has certain actions. It has GET and POST, which many of you are familiar with if you've been, you know, writing a lot of HTML forms before. And it has put and delete, which are the other verbs that are less frequently used. So the point of REST is to actually use these verbs directly in my API going forward. So values I actually don't need. And so I'm going to delete this, and we'll be building a new controller shortly. So let me just set this as the startup project so that we move forward. So let's get started with building the model. I'm going to create a new class and name it feature. And this is going to have all the data for each of those icons that I want to show you. So as we go through it, we're going to start with an ID. A name. An icon. Now you'll note one thing I've decided to do, just because I've architected my application this way, is I'm storing the pictures for all of these icons and images in the database. And that's just made it easy for me to write this application. But it works very well with the type of thing that I'm doing. Thanks. Okay, we'll keep going. We also want the version number. And we want the description. And again, the other image that we're showing is there. Now, as I've gone through this, one thing I've left out that you might notice is rating. We'll be coming back to show adding that rating later after I've already created the database. So very quickly, the next thing before we actually can run any code is just adding this controller. So MVC controllers let you compose your application by kind of showing data as a resource. Right now, I just need to create this features controller. And I'm making it an API controller instead of MVC. MVC is designed for user interface, whereas Web API is really built to be an API. And so once I create that controller, I'm going to be working with an API that deals with these gets, posts, puts, and deletes. So you can see that both MVC and Web API coexist with each other based on this root template. If I want to get to the Web API addresses, I'm just going to prefix it with the API and then the controller name, and then I can get to the ID. And that follows the REST pattern very well, where every item in the database or item that I want to locate has a name and ID associated with it. So all I have to do in here is, first I want to kind of create some dummy data just to serve up. And so we're going to name the feature. I want to get the model's feature there. And we're going to then just create a few dummy features. Okay, so after this, generics. The first thing I want to do is now associate something with that HTTP API. And so all I have to do is write a function that returns anything I want, but then I have to name it something. And so I just have to name it get. And actually, I can name it anything that's prefixed with get. I could name it get features, get the awesome stuff, get anything that I want. And the Web API will look through that and find any method starting with get and associate it with that. And so I'm just going to do return all the features here. So we're good. Now let's run this. So you'll see that it's bringing up a web page because we are running an MVC project. But the API is actually up here. So if I type API/features, what I get back is some JSON. So what I returned from that API was actually just a .NET enumeration of the features. But what gets sent over the wire is JSON. And that's because from Internet Explorer, it had a accept header that said, I want JSON. If I opened this from another application, like Firefox, which prefers XML, I would get back XML. And so that's one thing that's very nice about Web API is that it makes supporting various clients with different data formats very easy. But there's one thing I want to do is I want to be able to select just one item and get more information about that. And so that's fairly easy. We saw that in the route configuration, where I could say the controller name, which was features, and then I could put a slash plus some ID number. So all I have to do here is actually return a feature, but I'm going to say get, and it's going to take an ID. So all I need to do now is say var feature equals. And I'm going to select single or default, and then return that feature. Well, one thing that could happen, what if I pass the number 3? What would happen? I'd return null, which might be fine. But HTTP is an API that has lots of different return types. So I can do quite a bit here. So one thing I can do is actually change the HTTP message that I'm returning. So here I want to say if the feature is null, then do something else. And so what I can do is change the response to be an HTTP response message. And the status code is not found. Well, that's fine. Well, I can also change the context, the content of this to be a, thank you. I can change it so that it actually says the feature was not found. So I can send back some very customized text. And then instead of returning, I just throw a new HTTP response exception with that message. So this is one of those powerful things about Web API is that I'm actually using HTTP as the programming interface, which is, again, a very popular thing to do these days with REST. It also means that it works really well with many cross-platform scenarios. So if I'm building on other platforms for my client, I can consume data from Web API without having to be locked into specific proprietary transports or anything else. So this is really different from WCF. WCF was really built to be something that the transport was abstracted away so that I could switch it around. I might be using WCF to do cross-process communication, or I might be going over an HTTP binding or over a secure binding or something else. With Web API, you're programming HTTP directly. So let's go ahead and take a look at what's going on here. So when I run this, again, if I type features, I forgot the API, I can get back just that one ID that I got back. Well, if I go back and do something that isn't in our collection, it's going to return back that 404. But to see it in action, I'm actually going to track the request and response using Internet Explorer's debugging interface. So I'm going to just capture what's going on here. Now let's go and take a look at features 3. Well, as you see down here, I have a 404 as I expected. But I want to take a look at the actual response. Now, if I go back to that response body, then I have, the feature not found message that I sent. So I actually can use HTTP to communicate with the client using the response headers and the messages directly. So that's all very cool. And now we can move on to the next really fun part, which is Entity Framework. So the Entity Framework actually comes across from NuGet. And so I can go into NuGet from the project menu and I see what's available. It's the very first thing that's on the list, because it's very popular. And I actually have it already installed in this project because it came by default with the MVC4 framework. And so I can make use of it. I'm just going to go back to my feature here and start by adding a feature context. So it's just going to be a new type. And it's going to implement this type naming DB context. And to get to it, I just need to open the entity framework namespace, which is system data entity. Now, anything in here that is a property of a DB set, basically what's going to happen when I run this application, entity framework is going to see that feature is not a table within the database that I showed you the connection to earlier. And it's going to go create that on the fly. I need to name it again. So the next thing I want to do, just to make things easier, we're going to have more than one controller in this. So I want to keep a single connection. And I'm going to do that using a static repository type. This is just a really easy pattern that you can use. Because it's a static, the first time I access this class or access this repository member, the static constructor is going to go create it. So we're set with this now, and we can go back to our features controller and fix it up. And so I don't need this line anymore. I can delete that. And we're just going to have now a features context. And collect that from the features context. All right. And you'll note that we need to fix up our code to actually access the code. All right, so that's actually all I need to do in order to make use of this, this database. I've already written all the code to create the database and to pull data from it. Just to make things a little easy to see actually working, I'm going to populate the database with just one item from the constructor here. And all right, so that's all I need to do, and we're ready to run again. So what's going on right now is it's going back and creating that database and running that method that I just did. And it didn't do that until I actually created that controller. So the controller isn't generated until I actually navigate to it. You'll see that the data I got back was exactly what I expected. So, very good. So that was cool. Code first, how many of you have actually used it before? Yeah, quite a few. Code first was actually part of the .NET 4 wave. So that's great. But the next thing is really even better. You could say this is where the awesome sauce comes. If I want to add something and change my model here, and I just go to something very simple, I want to add a rating, just a new field. And I go back and try to run this again. It's not going to work. So, and that's because the model's changed since the last time I created it. So I don't really need this controller anymore, this constructor. So I'm just going to delete that because there's data in the database already. I can actually show you the data in the database here. We have the table with our columns here that we had before, but no rating. And you know, the data here is just link as the first entry in the entry. Well, this is where Entity Framework now in 4.5 has migrations. And the way I go about doing that is using the Package Manager console. It's under the Tools menu, Library Package Manager, and Package Manager here. It's at the bottom of the screen, so I'm going to move it up so that people here can see it. The Package Manager console is pretty cool. It's what you're seeing is this is part of NuGet, and NuGet's something that we've been marching more for forward with in Visual Studio. It's a really great way to share application libraries. And the Package Manager console is actually PowerShell. And so the first thing we're going to do is enable migrations. This is a command that came with Entity Framework. Misspelled. There we go. So the first thing that you'll see with enable migrations is that migrations folder was just added here. And it came with two files. The first one is the initial create. The number in front of it is a timestamp for right now. And then the configuration file. Configuration file we'll be taking a look at in just a minute. But initial create is the thing that lets me create the database. So it's the command that if I started without a database, that's the code that would do that. So as I go back to the Package Manager console, now I want to actually go through and add that migration. So far I have the initial create, which creates the database with just six items. Now I just want to go back and do it with more. So add migration is the command. And I'm going to name it add rating. And again, OK, so now we have add rating. You'll see another file got created here. And we're back up to what we saw before. And pull these back down and close our package manager. So the rating created these two functions, up and down. So one thing about migrations, if you already have a database in production, you want to be able to migrate to it. But you also would like to be able to roll back. And so that's what up and down does for you. Up takes the database forward. You'll see that we have this add a new feature column. And now I want to say that the default value for that is 3. It's pretty straightforward. So going back into our Package Manager console, I actually now want to run these migrations. And so all you have to do is type update database. I'm going to actually add the verbose tag. So what happens here now is that I have the actual SQL that changes this there. And so I can actually take all these commands and just generate the scripts, which I can then hand over to my database admin. So I've done everything I need to migrate this database. The last thing that's really nice about code first and data migrations is that I can seed the database with data that I want. And so the way I'm going to do that is in this configuration file that was generated with the migration, I'm going to seed the database with some code that I've already written. And it's fairly straightforward code, so I hope you won't mind me doing it. But I have all of the pictures and details for this database already saved off to the side. The code that I'm going to drop into here is just parsing a text file and putting that into the database. Very straightforward stuff. All right. So all I have to do again is run that update database command. And you'll see that there were no pending changes, but it ran that seed code at the end. My database is now full of data. Okay, so we've done, like, we're almost there. We've actually filled this database up with data, and the last thing that we want to do is actually meet that fast and fluid promise. And I can do that very easily by going and adding another controller. This time, what I want to be able to do is add a controller that is just a summary of the data that I want. And so this time, you know, going back to the application that you know we're about to build, the first thing I want to be able to do is get just a list of what are all the valid IDs so that I can go get each of the icons separately without having to download it all at once. So the first thing I want to do is get that the database connection in my controller. So I'm going to, again, get the repository. And this time, you all should be able to help me. The function I have to write is named what? Get. So, and what I'm going to return is actually an enumeration of integers, just so that I get the least amount of data that I have to send over the wire. So just naming it get is fairly straightforward. I'm just going to say the features. But this time, I also want to sort the features. I want the features to show up in a certain order. And so I can do that on this side by simply using order by and, you know, first show you the version. We'll show you the newest for things first, and then the names in alphabetical order. And that's it. So the second thing I want to be able to do is for each icon or each feature in my database, I want to be able to just get the icon and the name. I don't want to get anything else. That way I'm also, again, reducing the amount of things that I'm sending over the wire. So this time I'm going to return that feature for a specific ID, but only return a little bit. And so it's again named get, and I just have to do single. I could again write the HTTP response message again. I'll save you from having to watch me do that. And so this is where I just need to return the basic things I need. The ID, the name, and the icon. And that's enough for me to send everything over the wire. So I can see this in action very quickly by just running it. Oh, semicolon. Evil semicolon. Because if I returned F had all of the description and the images and the versions and all that other things that I don't want to show on that front screen. All I want to show on that front screen is just the name and the icon, and everything else I would get asynchronously later on. So I can go up here and see API and do features summary again. And when I get that, I get a list of numbers, as I would expect. So I'm sending very little over the wire here. And that's one of those really nice things about programming for a fast and fluid interface, is that I'm getting, you know, pretty responsive stuff. So we're done with the web side. We can now build that really cool Metro app. Yeah, a question on migration.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good question. So do you, when you're doing a database migration, does it know to run all of them? Or does it, you know, can it let you select which one? It actually lets you select which one. If you don't specify, it runs it up to the last migration that you've created. So it's kind of the end result. You can also then run the update database command and specify a separate migration to an earlier one, and it would downgrade the database the same way using the up and down methods that we showed earlier. Another question? A good question. So is there a standard today whether you're doing code first or schema first is the alternative in today's practices? Is there just a best practice here? Really, it comes down to what you prefer. Entity framework really gives you both sides of that. And there are people who really like to be database first. You might have a database admin that you know wants to be part of the design process. Or you might just have something where developers don't like to spend time in database schematics. So it really does come down to what the skills are on the team that you're working with. There really isn't a this is the best practice. So very good. So we're going to switch back into our main app. And this one, you know, has just a little bit that's going to make it easy. The first thing I want to show you is this the app manifest. So many of you know with Metro applications on Windows 8, you need to specify certain capabilities in order to use them. And the one that we're going to be using is the internet client. And that just lets me use the network and connect and get data across the network. If I hadn't specified that, when I would try to create a network connection from a web or a Windows API, it would refuse to let me do that. So the code that I need to write is fairly straightforward, and I kind of already started everything for us, so you didn't have to watch me write all this code again. It started off with the view model that matches the type that I created on the database. So just all of the methods like name, icon, image, description, version, and rating are all here. And it again implements this iNotify property changed. One of the nice things about the Windows 8 Metro templates is that it gives you a lot of things for free, and one of those is this base class named bindable base. So that lets me do set property and pass this. And it's using a lot of new features in 4.5 so that you don't actually have to pass the name of the property in whenever you change it. You know, the code now can figure it out on its own with the JIT. So I'm just going to jump to the end here and kind of replace the code that we had earlier that drew those kind of dummy icons. We just want to download something now. Well, before I do that, actually, I'm going to be using two things. I'm going to be using HTTP client, and then I'm going to be using a new feature, JSON, which in Metro, JSON deserialization, I have two options. I have data contract serializer from WCF. How many of you have used that? How many of you like that? That's kind of what one of you. So, I'm not particularly keen of that either. And then there's also the JSON API, which reminds me of .NET 1.0. Neither of those are good options. So the way I'm going to get around that is I'm going to use what's already available via the community, and go into, again, see if NuGet has a solution for me. So when I go to NuGet, of course, there's JSON.NET, which is great. And so all you have to do is add that to my project. Now I can use JSON.NET to deserialize that JSON. And so all of a sudden, I have JSON format. And then the HTTP client is in System.NET HTTP. So HTTP client is basically the mirror of Web API. You think about Web API was giving you the ability to program to HTTP by providing the GET, the POST, PUT, and DELETE methods. Client lets me just call those things directly, and so you're not having to create, you know, web client, you know, and customize the response and stuff. So the first thing I'm going to do is actually new up the client for me to use. And the client's maximum response rate by default is 64 kilobytes. I'd like that to be a bit bigger so that I could send a bit more data over the wire. So I'm going to send over, let it send up to a megabyte over the wire before I kind of say that's not allowed. Okay. And the next thing that I need to do is actually get the response back. So here I'm going to get the response from the client. And just to make things easier, I need to get where the client is, and I'm pulling that off of the project properties for the web backend. And you'll see that one of the nice things that's from the beginning, the client, when I created it, is not bound to a particular website. You know, every time I call with it, I can pass it a different address. And here I just need to pass in the code that I wanted. So when I actually hover over this, you'll see that what I'm getting back is a task. It's not a string. And this is the beginning of another feature that's new to .NET 4.5 is async. And you know, what I'm going to do now is add the classic word that comes with async, which is await. But it doesn't quite work yet, because await only works with async methods. And I do that by just adding async to the declaration. So what's happening with async right now? When I call this function getStringAsync, as soon as I call it, it's going to return. It's going to be doing some I/O operation in the background, but you know, it's going to return before that I/O operation finishes. And the compiler is then going to split the rest of the code up into a separate method that it's going to be called when that I/O operation finishes. That method's going to be called off of the thread pool. So it's a very nice way of componentizing my application. So now I just need to get that list of integers out of the response. I'm going to do that by using the JSON convert. Deserialize object type, and I want to get back a list of integers. All right. So now we can do something that's really cool, because you know, now I know what to go get, and I can now go get each of those icons one by one. And so here I just do. And again, get a response back for each one of these. And as I said before, with await, I'm splitting up my code, but I'm using this inside of a loop. And that's something that if I had to code by hand before, that would be incredibly difficult. Thank you again. So again, all I'm doing now is deserializing that object into the feature that I wanted to get. And this one has simply the icon, the name, and the ID. And now all I have to do is add that into my collection. So that was really all it took in order to consume that REST API. It was very quick. You know, it was just HTTP clients with one call and then just a bit of, you know, async. And so we're actually done building that front list. So I can now run the application. And you'll see I'm kind of collecting things, and then it asynchronously populated everything. So I have a Metro application that's kind of fun, and now you can kind of see what are all the features that came with .NET and a few of the ones that came with the earlier versions as well. And we'll be exploring these in just a second. But the first thing that comes up is, of course, I didn't get all that background data that came with it. So let's go fill that in first. And so that was the items page. And if I go to the items page and look at the function, there's this get more info that's, if I jump to it, it's empty. So I need to do all that code just again. So we'll kind of go through that very quickly. HTTP client. And we're going to do a response again. But this time I want to call the actual features to get all of the data back. And we're going to do, you know, feature equals. And you'll see right away I have this await thing again. And so I need to add async again. One of the conventions with async is I should name the function, you know, suffix it with the async. So I can use a very quick refactoring to put async on the end. And that'll fix up my code. So now all I have to do is in this type, whenever I update one of its properties, it's already wired with iNotify property change, so it'll update the user interface. So all I have to do is, you know, do version equals F version, the description, the rating, and the image. All right. So we go back into our application now, and we want to look into something. I can look at async, and now I have all the details. So that, you've seen end-to-end building a web application and a connected application. So I can kind of take you on a tour of a few of the other features that came with .NET. I'll show you async first. This is what that code was saving me from having to do. On the left here is the code without async, if I had to write it all out by hand. And with async and await, I could reduce that to just about, you know, 10 lines of code. So it makes writing really responsive applications that are touch-enabled very easy to accomplish. But there's more that we've done here with performance. Background garbage collection. How many of you have noticed, you know, the garbage collection pausing on you and don't like that? About, wow, far fewer than I expected. The nice thing about background garbage collection is this. 10 years ago, the biggest application that we really thought was like overdoing it was like 100 megabytes of memory. How many of you have written something that's under 100 megabytes of memory lately? Not very likely. And so today we're seeing huge amounts of memory. Like a machine that has more than 4 gigabytes of memory is fairly common. And, you know, that takes a lot longer to go through, you know, doing the mark and sweep phase. And especially these generation 2 collections for long-lived objects, is there a lot of them? It takes a while. What background garbage collection does is it lets the application keep moving forward and keep running while the garbage collector is looking through generation 2 to clean up. And so as long as you can allocate memory off of Gen 0, the application won't pause to do a Gen 2 collection. And so you can, this is actually enabled by default with .NET 4.5. If you want to specifically enable or disable it, this is the code that you need to write in your config file. And one thing that's very nice is that inside Microsoft, we have lots of good test cases. One of those is Bing. Last week, if you read the Windows Server blog, you can go to it and kind of see a case study of them upgrading to Windows Server 2012. What came with that was a great amount of power from .NET 4.5. And you see this chart here. Before the end of May, they were spending somewhere on average 7 and 8% of their time in the garbage collector. And the chart shows that after the end of May, they've been able to drop that down to roughly, on average, 1% of their time in the garbage collector. So that's just one of those really awesome things that comes with upgrading to .NET 4.5 and background garbage collection on the server. Another one that comes with that is here called multi-core JIT. Multi-core JIT, as you can imagine, is using more than one core to JIT your code. And this really helps with startup time, especially on websites. And you'll see, again, this is a case study that came from Bing, that before they upgraded, you know, it took quite a bit longer to start their applications. And now it dropped precipitously. And this is enabled by default in ASP.NET, so you don't need to do anything if you're a website and you want to take advantage of multi-core JIT. All you have to do is upgrade to .NET 4.5 or to Windows Server 2012, and you get this. If you are not, then you can use this line of code to kind of set the profile that we collect. And what we're doing is actually collecting profile information in order to get more information about what methods are used so that we're not going crazy and jitting the entire application at the start. So another fun one that was a common feature request was zip APIs. So we've added zip APIs, and you can kind of see that here. You can create a zip archive very easily for a folder and have all of the code there. And we've actually improved the zip algorithm as well so that you have better compression as well. So those are kind of the fun things that come along with that. I'm going to actually kind of continue on with the presentation. We can come back and explore more of these things, especially as we open up into question and answer. But the last thing I want to show you is actually this. That portable class library that we talked about, you get this dialog that shows you which platforms you want to target. So that's something that makes it easier to build these very connected applications with code targeting multiple platforms. So the way that I can do that is incredibly simple. All I have to do back in my solution is add a project type, and it's in the Windows category, and it's portable class library. You'll see the very first thing that comes up is which version of the different platforms you want. So I could say targeting .NET 4, but not Silverlight, and not Windows Phone. And so I could, you know, build something very easy that goes on both sides. And that is simply an assembly that I can drop in any application, do a project-to-project dependency for. Very simple. So what we've seen today is kind of a summary of building a fully RESTful connected application. We used code first with data migration to build the back end. Then we used web API to expose HTTP APIs. Then went into the client. We used HTTP client, and we had a fully immersive metro-style application. It was very fast and fluid, very responsive, because we used the minimum amount of data over the wire. And, of course, then we got to see NuGet in action by using both Entity Framework, Web API, as well as NuGet, and quite a bit more. So if you were to walk away from here today, some more features for you to go explore more about. Of course, Windows runtime and the Metro style apps and all the APIs that come with that. We did a lot to make everything in Windows Metro look like .NET when you're programming it. And so that's one of those nice things about the CLR is we're doing all the heavy weight to make all those APIs look just like C Sharp. And you might never know that. The next one is async and await. It makes it very easy to write applications that don't hold onto threads, don't consume a lot of memory when you're doing I/O. Portable class libraries if you're targeting multiple platforms. Of course, modern HTTP programming. If you're asking this question, what do I spend my time doing in order to prepare for the future? One of the best investments is really creating that clean API between the back end and the front end of your app. And right now, REST and HTTP are kind of the leading technologies for that. Entity framework with CodeFirst and data migration. We saw a lot of performance improvements across the board. A few of the other ones that I showed you, .NET 4.5 uses a lot less disk space than 4.0, yet still offers more features. And then, of course, user voice. If you haven't gone to the user voice website, it's http://visualstudio.uservoice.com. And that's a place where we look at features that people want, and it lets you all kind of vote on them. And it is something that we read through that list constantly to kind of figure out what does the community want us to do. And another thing that I haven't touched on, but we did spend a lot of time in 4.5 doing, is supporting ARM. This is obviously tied with the support for ARM with Windows 8. And so the .NET experience there is going to be offered from the Windows 8 perspective. So, obviously, this is the last presentation of the conference, and if you haven't had the chance to see these, you can go to see the recordings of them. And if you'd like to follow up with me and ask any questions about the .NET framework or the CLR, I welcome you to do that. My email address is listed here. It's brandon.bray@microsoft.com. And I think with that, I'll switch to the feedback session so that you can get the tag. You can send feedback for this session. I'd appreciate knowing what you thought, and would like to answer any questions for anyone who's willing to stick around for a little bit. Thank you very much.